You're listening to the IC Interviews from Investors Chronicle. My name is Lauren Almeida, and today my guest is Sir Ronald Cohen, who is described as the father of British venture capital, having co-founded Apax Partners in 1972. For nearly 20 years, he's pioneered initiatives in the world of impact investing, including the Social Impact Investment Task Force that was created during the UK's presidency of the G8. In this interview, Sir Ronald explains how the environmental and social impact of companies can be quantified and even laid bare in their financial accounts. So yeah, but first of all, thank you very much for taking the time to come on. Impact is a really, really great read. I really enjoyed it. And there's certainly a lot to discuss. But I guess, first of all, I wonder if you could explain for people who might not be familiar, what is impact investing and where and how did the idea come about?
Impact investment is investment that seeks to achieve both financial and social and environmental returns. So unlike traditional investment, where you would typically expect to look just at the profit that an investment would make, here you also measure the impact that the company that you're investing in is having on the people and on the environment. Now, it used to be thought that you could measure nothing in the social area. In fact, we're proving that you can measure a lot in the social area. And you can look at a company, you can look at its employment, you can look at its level of diversity, you can compare the diversity within the company to the diversity around it, in its around its facilities, and so on. You can attribute to the lack of diversity a cost, which is represented by the number of people missing at every echelon of the company and the salaries they would have got. You can look at gender parity in terms of employment and so on and so forth. So you can measure a lot. And then in the environmental area, we have four decades worth of measurement and science and pricing of carbon emissions and other emissions so that we can actually today publish the environmental cost of companies in quite an accurate way. An initiative I'm involved with at Harvard Business School published last week the environmental cost of 1,800 different companies. So I think our world is heading to making investment decisions that are based not just on risk return, but on risk return and impact. And the watershed between risk return and risk return impact will be the publication of impact-weighted financial accounts. And in that respect, there's a parallel with what happened in after 1929.
What do you mean by that?
So in 1929, after the Great Crash, investors realized that they had been investing in companies without understanding their true profits. Because in those days, there were every company could pick its own accounting principles. There were no generally accepted accounting principles. And there were no auditors to verify the figures that companies were publishing. In 1933, the US led the way in introducing both these things, standardized accounting principles and auditors. Today, post COVID-19, we find ourselves in a situation where $30 trillion worth of investment is flowing to companies and that seek to achieve more than profit, environmental, social, and governance investing, as it's called, seeks to minimize the harm that is done socially and environmentally. And yet there is absolutely no transparency on the real impact performance of companies. And so in the same way that in 1929 we brought much more dependable ways of measuring profit, we have to bring today much more dependable ways of measuring impact.
Where would this data, what would it be based on? Who would provide the data, and who would kind of finalize what the standard measurements would be?
So where we stand today is that of the 1,800 companies in the data set that I mentioned at Harvard Business School, the information is coming from public sources. So companies are publishing quite a lot of information about their environmental and social impact, but it's done in a haphazard way. And nobody is really bringing it all together. We're doing so for the first time, really. But what we would like is, of course, for governments to mandate that companies publish all of the information around their material impacts. And if I'm right, and governments realize that they actually need companies to deliver positive impact, to help government face the big challenges that confront us today, environmentally and socially, then within the next few years, if it's like 1929, within the next 2, 3, or 4 years, we can hope that governments will mandate that every company has to publish impact-weighted accounts alongside its normal financial accounts.
So in a world of impact-weighted accounts, I guess private investors who kind of had a, who wanted to invest with their conscience, as it were, would kind of be looking for companies with a net positive impact, or companies that are impact-oriented. How do you distinguish between an impact-oriented business and one that engages in philanthropy through its corporate budget?
So they're two very different things. The corporate budget wouldn't appear in the profit and loss statement of a company except as a philanthropic donation. Mm-hmm. But the impact that a company is having on the environment, so if you take a fossil fuel company, and I'm not in favor of investing in fossil fuels, as you probably know. But if you take a company like Shell, Shell is, through its operations only, delivering about $23 billion worth of environmental damage a year. And that compares with $39 billion for ExxonMobil and $13 billion for BP. Now, if you're a private investor and you believe you should continue to invest in fossil fuels, which I don't, then surely this would influence you. If the profitability of these three companies was similar, you'd have to be quite perverse in your thinking to decide that you should invest in ExxonMobil rather than in BP or Shell. So I think the big difference between impact-weighted accounting and CSR is impact-weighted accounting really brings the impact performance of a company into clear perspective alongside its profit performance. CSR is a form of brand-enhancing philanthropy that companies engage in. It's not going to affect the value of a company. Impact-weighted accounting will affect the value of the company, the value of a company, because investors will make different choices.
I think it's interesting, the example of oil and gas. I wonder, is it possible for all companies, or indeed certain sectors, to have a net positive impact at all, or is it just rather improving impact is what is important?
So again, if you look at the impact-weighted accounts data set at Harvard Business School, which is publicly available, you will see that impact varies by industry hugely. The construction industry, the chemical industry, the fossil fuel industry are obviously big creators of negative environmental impact. the pharmaceutical industry lesser, the paper industry more so. So it's in the nature of certain activities that they create more negative impact. Within each industry, though, the really striking thing from the data is the huge variability of impact performance, such as the figures that I just gave you with regard to ExxonMobil, Shell, and BP. But you can take the chemical industry. You can look at three companies. Sasol in South Africa has $12 billion of sales, and its environmental damage each year is bigger than its sales at $17 billion a year. You can compare that with Solvay, European company, where its environmental damage on sales of about $12 billion, again, is about $3.7 billion a year, 29% of sales, rather than 130% of sales like Sasol. And then if you compare it with BASF, which has five times the sales, it delivers $7 billion of environmental damage, which is equivalent to about 10% of its sales. So you can begin to analyze impact in the same way that we analyze profit.
I thought as well that it was interesting, kind of looking at impact-oriented businesses. The book mentioned Tesla and Elon Musk. And I thought as well that it was interesting that so ESG ratings for Tesla have been mixed, kind of depending on what they were looking at. So there have been some questions over the environmental cost of its manufacturing, and its electric vehicles are obviously more environmentally friendly than some other alternatives. But I wondered how then would impact weighted accounts, how would they relate to ESG ratings? What do you think the relationship between the two would be?
So first about Tesla, the point that I make in my book, Impact, Reshaping Capitalism to Drive Real Change, is that it is possible for impact companies, which have an objective to, in the case of Tesla, to deliver environmental improvement, to create huge value as they deliver impact. And I don't focus on the total impact of Tesla. I focus on the fact that through the actions of one entrepreneur, one company, we have seen a shift in the whole of the automobile industry in the direction of electric vehicles and, you know, hybrids on the way to fully electric vehicles. So in impact-weighted accounting, you would take into account what environmental damage was caused by the extraction of minerals to manufacture the batteries. You take into account the labor practices of a company. And next year, the Harvard Business School Initiative will be adding product impact and employment impact to environmental impact. Now, I think when we come up with impact-weighted accounts, all of the rating agencies are going to base their analysis on that, and we will begin to shift from the rather general qualitative assessment of companies' impact to a real measurement of what you were saying. Is it going to be net positive impact? And if so, how great is it compared to others in the same industry and across other industries?
So do you think that there is a partnership to be had with ESG ratings, or do you think that eventually impact-weighted accounts would sort of replace it?
Well, I think ratings will always have a role to play, just as you have ratings of companies, even though we have very sophisticated financial accounting. It's an additional tool. The problem with ratings is that you can have a high rating for environmental, a low rating for social, and you don't know what the net is. Impact-weighted financial accounts give you the net because you monetize both the social and the environmental impacts, and you're able to say at the end of the day, this company is a net positive contributor or a net negative detractor.
So I know we focused mainly on investing, but the book is also about how impact could change capitalism and could change our economies. And I know that there have already been some mechanisms that have kind of already created a tangible effect on people's lives. So for example, through rehabilitation of people coming out of prison. I just wondered if you could explain social investment bonds and how they work.
Absolutely. So we've typically helped charitable organizations as a philanthropist by giving them money and not really measuring what they do. The result of that is that most charitable organizations, in fact, almost all charitable organizations, share two characteristics across the whole world. They're small and they have no money. And we tried, starting in 2000, to find ways of connecting investment and charitable organizations so that they could grow like businesses, basically, by raising investment capital with a long-term time frame. And in 2010, we had a breakthrough when we issued the first social impact bond to help prisoners at Peterborough Jail. After their release, stay out of jail. As you probably know, 60% go right back to jail within 18 months of release. In order to achieve an improvement, we invented a new security, the social impact bond. So £5 million was raised. It funded delivery organizations which were working with the prisoners, delivering services to them, had done so for decades in some cases. And these organizations signed an agreement, basically, with the investors of the organization signed an agreement with the Ministry of Justice, which had basically said, if you reduce the number going back to prison by more than 7.5% over a period of 5 years, then we will pay you your investment back, and then we will pay you a yield on that investment that increases with your success. In the event, 5 years out, the Peterborough SIB, as it's become called, the Peterborough SIB paid out 3.1% a year in addition to the return of capital because it had achieved a 9.7% reduction in the number of prisoners going back to jail. Now, in those days, it looked like the financial instrument that charitable organizations needed because if they can deliver an attractive return, they can go back to the investors. And raise more money, and so it can fund their growth. And their success depends on rehabilitating prisoners in this case, or reducing the number of homeless, or number of pre-diabetics becoming diabetics, or dropouts from school, or whatever it is, over 15 different social issues today: unemployed youth getting into jobs. The better you do at helping people, the better you do financially. Now, what's interesting about the social impact bond is that it's the first time we've had a financial security that optimizes risk, return, and impact. And then when we began to see the social impact bond spread, and through the work of the G8 Task Force in 2013 and 14, we began to realize our whole world is moving in the direction of optimizing risk return impact. Young people don't want to work for polluting companies or companies that are employing child labor. Investors don't want to invest in them. Talent doesn't want to work for them. And the reality is today that the governments need companies to bring solutions, not to create problems, which governments have to tax everyone in order to try and remedy them. So the social impact bond exemplified impact thinking. that you can optimize risk return impact, you can deliver attractive financial returns. The average return on a portfolio of 40 social impact bonds is about 8% gross in the UK. The Bridges Social Impact Bond Fund has been delivering that. It has two funds now, and it's a very attractive return for an investment that doesn't go up and down with the stock market or with interest rates.
And I suppose that the idea is that if you don't make returns, it can kind of be viewed as a charitable donation to a good cause.
Exactly. In a way, you're hedged. If you're successful, you get a return and you've helped people. If you fail, you try to help.
So investors in instruments like the social impact bond would be primarily motivated by altruism. And I think you use a great expression about impact investing being the invisible heart of the market. And I thought it's interesting kind of capitalism needing a revamp. And where do you think this fits historically? How is this a reaction to the 2008 financial crisis, and where does it fit in terms of the world being turned on its head by coronavirus?
Well, first of all, just on one statement you made, I believe that optimizing risk return and impact can deliver better returns than optimizing just risk return. The reason is that you minimize when you look through an impact lens at your investments, the risk of a company being deserted by its talent, its consumers, or being deserted by its investors because it's doing the wrong thing. And you also, of course, avoid the risk of regulation and taxation, which we're beginning to see increasingly is increasingly high for companies in the fossil fuel area. At the same time, it opens the door to new sets of opportunities. Serving underserved populations at scale, which you wouldn't have thought of had you not had impact in mind. And if you remember in the book, I give an example of a company that has developed a pair of spectacles for the blind, which whispers into their ear the page of the book they're holding or the banknote they're holding in their hand, and so on. There are 35 million blind people in the world, 250 million visually impaired people. But if you ask yourself the question, how can the impact of this company improve the maximum number of lives, then you say it's by using its technology, perhaps. To help the 800 million illiterate adults in the world to read. And so all of a sudden you've defined a market of 1.1 billion people instead of 300 million people. So I think it's very important to understand that this notion that most of us have, that because there's something philanthropic about doing good and doing well, you're bound to make less money. That notion is wrong. In my view, as Professor Michael Porter, eminent strategist, again at Harvard Business School, has said, I think impact is really going to be the big disruptor, and it's going to be the way in which companies are going to overtake others, just as they did through technology. In the past 3 or 4 decades, the same is going to be true of impact in the decades ahead. Those companies that don't incorporate impact into their activities are going to be overtaken, basically.
To go back, do you think that it does relate at all, this idea that capitalism needs to be rethought and companies need to think about their impact? Does it relate at all to the 2008 crisis? And
Yes, I think it relates to inequality as well as to environmental damage. We came out of 2008 with even greater inequality than we had before it. We've seen a violent rebellion with the Gilets Jaunes in France. We've seen it in Chile, in the Lebanon, even the 2016 referendum on Brexit in the UK. Its result was influenced heavily by the inequalities and the frustrations that these inequalities caused among swathes of the UK's population. And I think COVID-19 risks doing the same again. Coming out of COVID-19's crisis, we're going to see even greater inequality, and we're going to see the most vulnerable hit the hardest yet again. And so, if governments are going to be heavily indebted after COVID, and you're going to have very high levels of unemployment and a horde of social issues to contend with, how do you cope? Well, the only way you can cope is by bringing investors and companies to help solve the problems alongside government. And that's why I think we will get to impact-weighted accounts, and we will turn our economies into impact economies that optimize risk-return impact, because we have to do so out of necessity, no longer out of choice.
Great. Well, I think that is kind of our time, but it's really, really interesting conversation. So thank you for coming on. It's nice to end on more of a pragmatic note rather than all doom and gloom. So yeah, impact investing, way to go.
Fantastic.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics, all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.